to The Upper Hand, where Chuck and Chris talk hand surgery.
We are two hand surgeons at Washington University in St. Louis, here to talk about all aspects of hand surgery, from technical to personal.
Thank you for subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
And be sure to leave a review. That helps us get the word out.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chuck.
How are you?
Good. We are further apart from each other than the last time we recorded.
Yeah, we were way too close, but now we are, I think we are safely socially distanced.
We are very, very distanced right now. So we're recording this over Zoom, just like everybody has been death by Zoom for the last week or two, I bet.
Yeah. I mean, my God, you know, there are many mistakes I make in life. And while stocks are very minor and everyone's consideration, buying the Zoom stock in the fall would have been a good move.
Exactly. So just for everybody's point of reference, today is March 25th. You know, we are both Chuck and I work in St. Louis in the middle of the U.S., certainly an area that has not been hit by the COVID-19 issue as much as many other parts of the world and even in our own country here.
It is a scary but fascinating time. I don't think any of us have lived through a pandemic, and we're all learning on the fly and learning what leadership means in time of crisis and learning what planning looks like. So many lessons. And while this podcast may be outdated quickly for some of the specific information we share, we thought an emergency podcast might be interesting and to some degree, hopefully helpful.
So how has COVID-19 affected, and we can start with your clinical practice?
Yeah, so we made the decision a week ago to stop all elective surgery, which felt in some ways a little early for St. Louis, not early, but we wanted to be ahead of the curve and do our part, both as leaders in our city and in our region. And while at that point, so 1 week ago, St. Louis only had known cases that were acquired in other locations, and then the patient flew back to St. Louis. A week later, that's changed, and there are certainly many known cases that have been St. Louis and to St. Louis and acquired. So as of a week ago, we stopped elective surgery, and we dramatically ramped back on elective visits to our clinical practice.
I think we're all becoming experts on the fly with telemedicine, right?
So it's been a super interesting thing. So our department, and Chris and I together, are super grateful to Aaron Chamberlain, Diane Griffith, and a number of others who have, this is unbelievable. So literally 1 week ago, we had done maybe one televisit in our department. We were going to move in that direction, excuse me, but we weren't there. And then as of Monday, I believe we did 20 or 30, and each day this week has ramped up more. And that's made easier by the relaxation of requirements for who and what and when for all the telehealth, but my goodness, it's been unbelievable how rapid this has happened.
Now, what do you think has been going on with our residents? I mean, they're obviously a big part of our workforce, and as somebody who is a vice chair for our department, you've probably heard a lot about the discussions, both of, you know, what we are doing here, but then also what's being done nationally.
I think there is, you know, the residents in some ways are frontline workers, as all of us are, but they are in the hospital more than Chris and I are, for example, because we, you know, are outpatient type surgeons, and we have a really, for now, and we'll get to that. But the residents are potentially more at risk. And so we are doing what we can to keep them as safe as possible. So a lot of things have been done. So Chris and I both experienced this. Number one, when we do our clinics, and granted our clinics are smaller than they have been in the past, our clinics are just us and maybe one medical assistant. And we try to get patients in and out with no waiting in the waiting room, and ideally less than two patients actually in our pod of four rooms. And so we don't need the residents there. We do want to continue educating the residents. So as of this week, we ramped up our resident education conference. And we're, you know, if there's one trainee in the operating room with us, that can either be a resident or a fellow. What's your sense of things with the residents, Chris?
You know, I think, right now, my understanding is that we've gone to almost a half-on, half-off type of workforce for the residents, and I think that is to maintain the viability of the resident workforce should things escalate even more quickly. And, you know, I know there are some hospitals in other parts of the country where they've had residents, orthopedic residents, and orthopedic faculty test positive. So it's one of those things where you never know where the tipping point is going to be for this kind of thing. I think that maintaining resident morale right now is a real challenge. You know, as all of us like to be busy, our residents are fantastic. They love to be helpful. They're energetic, they're eager, and this has got to be really hard on them. Because it might be fun to have a day or two off at first, but then it's like, well, what am I going to do? So a lot of kudos to Sandy Klein and Alex Salim, our residency director and associate residency director, on trying to find ways to keep them engaged. I know Sandy's been canvassing faculty in terms of who can participate in these new resident impromptu conferences. And honestly, you know, one of the silver linings is that we probably can have some really cool content that can be recorded readily on video conference to share with residents who weren't able to see it the first time around, and could be something that stays in the bank down the line.
That's exactly right. You said a couple of interesting things. We are doing the 1 week on, 1 week off, or 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off for the residents. Amongst attendings, we have let divisions make a choice about how to handle that. But what we are insisting upon is there's no close interaction amongst divisions. So, for example, Chris and I are seeing each other over Zoom, but we have not laid eyes on each other in quite some time and won't. So the risk of Chris and I both going
down. The loss is yours, Chuck.
The loss is all mine. That we can agree on. And then the education piece is fascinating as well. So this week there have been several hours each morning of conference, which is awesome. And then the subspecialty conferences are gearing back up as well. So last week for PEDS, we used to do an indications conference on Friday morning. We did that. It was great. We're doing it again with a little more added to it this week. And as Chris and I have talked about, next week we're going to get back into the hand conference world as well using Zoom. And we're trying to figure out exactly what that looks like. What are your thoughts on our normal anatomy session? Can we do that by Zoom?
You know, I think we'll have to get innovative. So for those of you that aren't familiar with our anatomy setup, how we typically do it is that a resident or a group of residents will do essentially a prosection and present it to the faculty and the rest of the trainees. And it's a bit of a Socratic type of educational session. The residents present what they've learned from the session, and we try to prod them a bit and try to expand their learning, their knowledge. But that's going to be really hard. You know, that's a big part of our didactic structure and our fellowship and our residency for the hand service. And without having that kind of in-person interaction, it's really difficult. And as anybody who appreciates, hands and hand surgery, a lot of that is 3D. So trying to capture that through video is going to be really hard. There's so much value in the residents, trainees, and even us, obviously, still doing dissections. So I think maybe one idea would be to strap a GoPro on somebody and see if they can bring us through their dissection. It won't be the same as us seeing it in person, but still having that ability to, you know, discuss the anatomy, really further their own knowledge. Because as a trainee, I learn the most from being in the anatomy lab, doing dissections over and over again, taking pictures and labeling it for my own reference. And some of that's how I learn as a learner. But I think there is no substitute for a cadaveric dissection in terms of preparing for surgery and really learning the anatomy.
Yeah, and that's so true. If we knew this was going to be 4 weeks, we would just say, okay, we can do without anatomy for 4 weeks. And we can certainly hold conferences with journal clubs and with case conferences and with lectures. But we don't know how long this is going to last. And so just saying no anatomy until further notice is tough. So we may have to play around with the format to try to make it work. The other thing you hit on, which I think is super important, is the mental health aspect of this. You mentioned the residents and how they and all of us really are just have a lifestyle which is committed to our work. Hopefully we have balance, as we've talked a little bit about in the past. But this is tough. This is tough on all of us. It's tough on our families. And so we all need to be aware of that piece. I know your wife is a physician, my wife is not, but a two-doctor family to me is even, you know, inordinately more challenging than a non-two-doctor family.
Well, yeah, for us, I mean, it's been very different. So we have two young children, 4.5, or as he says now, 4 3/4-year-old. And a 22-month-old, and one of them's at school typically, and one of them's at a daycare. And we kind of hit our stride with how to make everything work in a way that we're both all four of us are happy and healthy. But now, obviously, this has now thrown everything for a loop. we're fortunate in, you know, the regard that this is still sort of an inconvenience in a sense for us, but we know that that can quickly change in a lot of ways, and you never know where things are going to escalate. You know, our daily routine now is very, very different. My wife and I now alternate clinical schedules. And, you know, so one of us is home with the kids. The other one is taking care of patients or doing surgery or something like that. And that's very different than what we usually do. In a sense, being home is harder. And anybody who is a stay-at-home parent will testify to that. Especially, you know, our 22-month-olds can be a little difficult to accommodate at times. You know, I'm learning to appreciate the silver linings of some things, you know, being at home for breakfast, spending more time with the family, just trying to be more present. It's really helped in that perspective. And I hope there are some silver linings that can come from this, you know, assuming that, you know, we all stay healthy, both mentally and physically. But, you know, I wonder, honestly, one last thing maybe we could talk about is how you think healthcare might change going forward. I mean, we basically are diving head over heels into telemedicine now. And I don't know if that's going to be an option that we love or patients love, but I guess it's the future. I mean, we were dipping our toes in before. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, before I jump into telemedicine, I'll share my personal experience, which is very different than yours.
Oh yeah, please do.
So I have a 20-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 15-year-old at home, and she'll be very happy. I called her a 15-year-old. She has about 4 weeks before she turns 15. And it's so different than your experience. My wife and I are grateful that our kids are older at this stage. Initially, it was tough because they're all super mobile and social, and they wanted to get out of the house. And we've been locked in for going on 2 weeks. On Friday, it'll be 2 weeks that my kids have not left the house other than to exercise. And so they've all developed their routines. And, you know, there's a lot of Netflix and there's a lot of FaceTime with their friends. There is a daily TikTok dance show with the three of them. Occasionally they try to get mom or dad in, but it's so different than your experience because they are.
Please record that.
I'll share a couple of them with you. They are hilarious. You know, they're just at different stages and require less from my wife and I than certainly your children do. Yeah. So
how are you maintaining your daily wellness? I know that, you know, exercising is a big part of your thing too. And, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah, I think last week was super challenging in the hours expended and just the shift in how I spent my time, you know, away from clinical duties and all meetings and meeting. And, you know, I was waking up earlier and staying up later, and my day was completely, you know, unbelievably filled, indescribably so. And many listeners will have had the same experience. This week is, first part of the week was the same. This week, as of, you know, yesterday afternoon, maybe today, it feels like maybe it's slowing down a little, but I don't know that that's true. But we as a department have tackled different things such as telehealth, such as how to keep people safe. We changed our check-in process, for example. So there's now remote check-in that you don't have to go to the desk. We're trying to keep people in the car before they even walk in our building. We had to establish screening. So what you find in these situations are the people who step up in your organization, who make their skill sets and their dedication to patient care and our community known. It's really, really impactful and impressive. I'll keep going and just say the telehealth process is fascinating. And, you know, when the restrictions come back, it'll be a little trickier. But I have to say, I've done a couple of telehealth visits. I have a couple more scheduled for tomorrow. And whether I just got lucky and the type of patient worked out for both of mine, it was awesome. It was a good, frank discussion. I was able to make a diagnosis and develop a plan. One of the patients has relatively notable moderate to severe carpal tunnel with really bothersome symptoms. The patient and I, agreed that we're not going to jump to surgery given the issues, but he's having enough trouble and has failed all conservative treatment that he requested an injection. So that it may even be controversial whether he should come in for an injection, but he's coming in for an injection on Monday. And that's just one example of how telehealth worked perfectly. And I think it's more challenging with less tech savvy patients. But man, I think it is going to change the way we operate in a good way.
Yeah, I was just on a conference call for an academy committee, an AOS committee, and obviously COVID-19 is what's on everybody's minds. And, you know, there were people saying, you know what, there are going to be some really wacky ideas, but there are going to be some really good ones that come out of this. And hopefully when everything settles down, you know, hopefully soon, we're able to implement some of those things to improve how we take care of patients.
Yeah, I think we have been careful, Chris and I, in this podcast, not to get into the medical aspects of COVID-19. It's changing at such a rapid pace. I will tell you where we are today. Our employees are not wearing masks. Our anesthesiologists, like many of those across the country, have now started wearing N95s for all intubations and extubations. And we know that that is a dangerous time. So I think it's safe to say that surgeons should stay out of the operating room if possible during those two time points. And I think we will probably rapidly shift to all of the medical providers and staff wearing masks at all times. Like many places, we are concerned about our supplies. I think we are going to get new supplies, and you know, shipments are coming. But that's kind of where we are today. I don't know if you have thoughts on that, Chris.
Yeah, I haven't been able to corroborate it, but I heard that that was coming. You know, the masks all the time for healthcare providers was happening in the Boston systems. I know that I heard that Geisinger was going to start doing that. So things will just start shifting west. So I imagine that's coming for us too.
Yeah, I think what we know is that if you put a mask on an infected patient, it's really helpful to have that mask on, even if it's just a surgical mask. I don't think there's any science that I'm aware of that says putting a mask on a healthy patient dramatically decreases the aerosolized particles that could infect us. But it just feels right. And so we're not there yet. And we're trying to make sure we calculate so we don't run out of critical supplies. So it probably is coming. I don't know when it'll be in St. Louis.
Yeah, it's always hard to balance, you know, the science and the evidence base versus optics. And it's a consideration to keep because I think some patients want that precaution. Other patients aren't quite as concerned. And just in general, I've been socially distancing. So the only place I've gone is the grocery store. And in just seeing, you know, what people are doing in the grocery store is always interesting. I've seen different things, you know, different places. I've seen some people wearing masks inside their cars, which make a lot of sense to me. But, you know, hey, you know, to each his own at this point, I guess, right?
That's right. Excellent. Well, this was an emergency podcast. We hope it's been interesting. And maybe future emergency podcasts won't be so serious. Yeah. But I think this is hopefully this is interesting. And we welcome feedback by email or certainly on Twitter. But we are happy to have had a chance to chat. It's good to see your face, Chris.
Nice to see you, Chuck. All right. Till next time.
Everybody take care.
All right.
Hey, Chris, that was fun. Let's do it again real soon.
Sounds good. Well, be sure to check us out on Twitter at Hand Podcast. Hey, Chuck, what's your Twitter handle?
Mine is at Congenital Hand. What about you?
Mine is at ChrisDMD, spelled D-Y. And if you'd like to email us, you can reach us at handpodcast@gmail.com.
And remember, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
And be sure to leave a review. That helps us get the word out.
Special thanks to Peter Martin for the amazing music. And remember, keep the upper hand and come back next time.